Chapter 19. Zara.
Shek Kandezin, I say, stumbling over the unfamiliar syllables. The women gathered in the sewing tent giggle as I apparently butcher the pronunciation. Shek Kandezin, Kari corrects, emphasizing the ace in the middle of the word. The phrase, which I've interpreted to mean, "How are you today?" has proven much more difficult to pronounce than I anticipated. For all I know, I could have just said, "How do you smell today?" or something equally ridiculous. I nod, determined to get it right. Shek Kandezin, I repeat, doing my best to say the phrase exactly as she had. The young mother smiles, nodding excitedly. She says something too quickly for me to make out, reaching forward and squeezing my hand affectionately. The rest of the women bob their heads and chatter amiably, continuing to work on the garments resting in their laps. Some of the words they say sound familiar, like good and improving, but they speak them so fast that I only have a vague idea what they're talking about. I decide to go about my usual routine of nodding and smiling in return, trying not to get discouraged. I can channel source energy into radiant magic. I can burn dark hounds to cinders with mage fire and create shields on demand, but this is proving harder than I thought. I fiddle with the square of coarse fabric in my lap. If only I had some sort of reference book or something, this would be so much easier. I've been at it for over 2 weeks, talking with everyone I can day in and day out, and still I feel like I'm in over my head. Every time I think I've made a little progress with their language, it gets buried with more information. Grammar patterns, conjugations, and the lack of any discernible writing system makes communicating with the Wastelanders extremely difficult, not to mention the fact that they are busy laboring from sunup to sundown, providing for themselves and their demon overlords. Kari seems to notice the consternation hiding behind my smile, so she scoots closer to me, threading a strip of fabric through a hole with a bit of wood. She speaks slowly, clearly enunciating each word in the sentence. I pick out the words "you," "good," and what I assume is "patience," but the rest is lost on me. Still, her kind eyes make me grateful that she's taken a liking to me. The other women have been slow to accept me, many treating me with fear or even open hostility. It wasn't until Kari invited me to their sewing circle that they began to loosen up, their demeanor softening as they've watched me struggle to communicate with them. If there's one thing these people know, it's struggle, I think, reminding myself to relax. You might be the first mage in history attempting to interpret a living language. Try not to get discouraged. Kari continues to practice words and phrases with me as we work, pointing at objects and patiently waiting for me to sound out their correct names. Their language seems to be a corruption of the ancient tongue of Camden, which was destroyed more than 1,000 years ago during the doom of Bihalia. Based on my embarrassingly limited knowledge of ancient history, I know that Camden was one of the more dominant empires on the continent, and their language was widely spoken. It was also among the first kingdoms to collapse during the demon invasion. There remain similarities between the tongue of Camden and the common tongue of Tarsinium, but after centuries of isolation, they are few and far between. Still, despite these difficulties, I remain cautiously optimistic that I'll eventually be able to converse with them. If not, well, it's best not to think about that. As I attempt to communicate with Kari and the others, I mindlessly work on the fabric in my lap. The threads appear to be made from some sort of coarse animal hair, woven to create tiny ropes of rough-spun strings. The fabric is unbearably itchy. I should know. I've worn it briefly while my mage robes were being cleaned, but at least it provides cover from the scorching rays of the sun. While my hands are moving, my mind is preoccupied with memorizing everything I've learned so far. Rock, cloth, food, tent, happy, sad, man, woman. The words themselves are simple, but they're difficult to pronounce and even harder to implement correctly. Although their grammar structure seems simplistic, it's in fact extraordinarily complex when conjugations are considered, especially since I lack the context to understand what they're talking about half the time. Ink and parchment would make this easier, I think, chagrined. You can only scratch so many things down on a bloody rock. Wiping a bead of sweat from my cheek, I examine the textile I've been working on, dissatisfied with its progress. Frowning, I use my fingernails to pluck an irregular knot, teasing it out so that I can retie it. Everything has to be perfect here. That much has been impressed upon me by the others. Half of everything we make goes to the demons, and imperfections bring severe punishment. At least, that's what I've gathered. The demons make things significantly more complicated, I think, resisting the urge to sigh. They're the biggest threat to us returning home safely, and yet nobody seems to want to talk about them. The Wastelanders apparently revere the R'hllar as gods, vengeful deities who will destroy you for stepping out of line. Instead of worshipping them, they cower in fear before them, sacrificing their children and food rather than suffering their wrath. The Wastelander youth, however, seem more defiant than their elders. They balk at their back-breaking work and seem to regard Owen and me with an unusual amount of respect, almost reverence. I've no doubt their fiery spirits will eventually be crushed like the rest of their people, but for now, they're the only ones who seem to have any fight left in them. Hours pass, and my hands start to hurt from working the fabric. What's more, the stuffy tent has grown stiflingly hot, and my bent posture has caused my back to ache. At some point, we break for food, stepping out into the sun and over to another tent where bushels of withered dry fruit have been prepared. Like most of the foods the slaves eat, it's bland and chewy, but I consume it all the same, being famished from working through most of the day. After washing the fare down with some tepid water, we return to the tent and resume our labor, toiling like the Prince of Darkness himself is watching us. Lean and scrawny though they are, the other women work tirelessly, sewing and weaving with calloused, nimble fingers throughout the afternoon. They husk alien plants I don't recognize and grind flour by hand, mending and scrubbing and repairing clothing and tents, never remaining idle for long. Their endurance puts me to shame, and by the time night falls, I'm about ready to collapse from exhaustion. These days spent working side by side with the Wastelanders is the hardest I've ever worked in my entire life. I'm built for studying in cool libraries, not exerting myself in this harsh desert climate. If I didn't know better, I'd think they're trying to kill me. As darkness falls, we gather with the rest of the encampment around the fire pits and eat mushy grains, dry fruit, and, to my dismay, crunchy insects resembling locusts. I politely decline them when they are offered, resisting the impulse to gag. Nighttime is my favorite part of the day, as it's usually when I get to spend the most time with Owen. Despite our exhaustion, we spend a few hours of the night walking through camp, chatting, and even joking with each other from time to time. A sense of normalcy enters our lives as the days wear on, and we begin to resume the courtship we had started in Dunmar City. Every night before falling asleep, we share a kiss, and sometimes more than one, finding comfort in each other's arms. It makes me think that maybe, just maybe, we can create a life for ourselves out here, even if all our other plans fail. Days pass, and I begin to lose count of how long we've been living among the Wastelanders. My efforts to integrate myself with their culture consume my every waking thought. My dedication seems to be paying off as I make minimal progress in learning their language. I can string words together in juvenile sentences, and more often than not, the women seem to understand me. But interpreting their reply is another matter entirely. As I sit in the sewing tent for yet another day of work, I feel myself growing more confident in my speech, the half-woven basket I've been working on all but forgotten in my lap. Mening ismim Zara sizchi, I say, trying to enunciate every syllable correctly. Kari claps excitedly, her smile broadening. Yudayaksi, she replies, congratulating me. Yudayaksi rivoya. I smile as well, feeling a genuine sense of accomplishment. Sizga kataramat. The other women chatter and grin, offering encouraging words at my simple phrasing. Pulling a length of plant fiber through a hole, I hold up my basket for Kari to see. Bukanti korinish ega? I ask, inquiring about how it looks. She shakes her head. Bukande korinish ega, she corrects gently. Then she points to my basket, where an obvious hole remains on its surface. Buteshini kerak. I bite my lip, examining the hole and then returning to work, patching it up. Ramat, I say, thanking her. Moeok, she replies, indicating that all is well. We continue this way for several hours, talking and working as we have every day since arriving in their camp. I lose myself in the process, learning new things and keeping my hands busy while the day grows late. It feels good to finally be making progress, to know that my efforts haven't been for naught. When all this is over, perhaps I can teach them what I've learned at the academy, I muse, scratching idly at a splinter in my palm. I think I'd like that. Professor Dennell has a nice ring to it, although Professor Lund sounds nice, too. A frightened scream rips through the air outside. All conversation vanishes as we look at each other, concern painted plainly on everyone's faces. When the scream sounds again, we immediately stand and leave the tent. Together we rush to the outskirts of the encampment, where most of the other slaves have already gathered. Everyone mutters nervously beneath their breath, clutching their children close as they mill about in confusion. Owen spots me and races over to my position, his cloak billowing behind him. "What's going on?" he asks, hand going to the hilt of his quill dagger. "I'm not sure," I reply. "We heard the screaming and came at once." He looks eastward to the hills, squinting to make out something in the distance.
"Someone's coming."
A young man, no more than 15 years old, sprints toward us with reckless abandon, waving his arms wildly. He screams, voice carrying over the Badlands, shouting words like help and need. I also catch what I assume to be the word for God or demon. As I decipher the words in my head, my stomach sinks.
"What is it?" Owen asks. "What's he saying?"
"I think he's saying there's a demon in the hills," I reply, "and that people are trapped, in danger."
He curses and runs a hand through his unruly hair.
Around us, people wring their hands and whisper nervously, some even wailing in despair. I can't make out everything they're saying, but none of it is good. When the young man reaches the edge of camp, sweating and gasping, he continues to wave his arms and shout, begging for help. "If there's a demon out there, we need to fight it," I say, turning to look at Owen. If not, those people will die.
Do they even want our help, Zara?
He looks at me.
Last time those demons came crawling through here, they did nothing. And we don't even know what we're facing. A Gorgon? A Manticore? I don't know if I'm keen on going up against one of those again.
I chew my lower lip, thinking. Does it matter if they want our help or not? They're innocent people, and they need our help.
Owen nods, but doesn't reply.
I know we almost got ourselves killed when we went after that beast, and if it's the same thing, maybe we can distract it so the others can escape. But I'm not sure that dagger of yours will be enough to kill it.
He hesitates for a moment, then nods before he responds. Wait here.
Turning, he sprints back in the direction of our tent. The youth continues to shout urgently at the gathered crowd, and several of the women nearby have started to weep. Those surrounding them pat their backs comfortingly, looking down with haunted eyes.
Light! What I wouldn't give for a source crystal right now!
When Owen returns, he's carrying the bow he's been working on, with a handful of crude-looking arrows tucked under his arm. He comes to a stop before me and drops the arrows to the ground, then uncoils a string from his pocket. Bending the bow slightly, he loops the ends of the string around notches carved into the wood before he tests the pull a few times. Nodding in satisfaction, he picks up the arrows, which look to have been tipped with sharpened stones.
Is it ready? I ask, trying to keep the worry out of my voice.
It'll do, he says gruffly, slinging the bow over his shoulder. Let's go.
I follow him as he strides to the edge of camp.
And what should I do?
He pauses, then pulls out his quill dagger, handing it over to me.
Use this. It isn't much, but it'll do some damage if you see an opening.
Grimacing, I accept the grisly weapon, hefting it in front of me warily. It's lighter than I expected, like a shard of hardened tree bark, though the point remains wickedly sharp.
All right, I say after a few seconds. I'll follow you.
Owen nods and takes off at a jog, making his way toward the hills, while I follow suit. Many of the wastelanders gasp and point, astonished that we'd rush headlong into certain death. The youth, who'd grown hoarse from shouting, utters his surprise and falls into step beside us, his haggard features growing hopeful. Together, the three of us rush off to face down yet another demon.